Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
I'm still saying hello.
Yeah, last week I complained. That was kind of a mediocre hello.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I don't think you really meant that hello.
No, because I was thinking to myself, gosh darn it, I was supposed to come up with something new.
Gosh darn it. You were actually thinking, gosh darn it.
I cleaned it up.
I'd like to raise my hand and call bull. Yay!
It was more of an FFS.
Hello, I'm Derek. So we're recording this before Christmas.
Before Christmas,
but yeah. This is actually, if you're listening to it, it's Boxing Day after Christmas.
Yeah, and as we're recording this, we're in the middle of a snowstorm,
right?
And Derek has to drive home afterwards.
But trying to stay warm, we are drinking Old Flame Brewing Company Raven Premium Black Lager.
It's a nice one.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
These are not too... This brewery's up in Port Perry.
Yes.
Not far from us. Good beer. Yeah. So, what do you think you're getting for Christmas? So, you can guess now.
Yeah.
And then listen to this on Boxing Day and see if you were right.
I don't know. Well, I don't...
What are you getting yourself for Christmas?
I never think of it in terms of that. I kind of tell them, don't get me anything.
Oh, well, I was saying don't get me anything, but the dog let it slip. The cats got me some zipper lube for my dry suit.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
They went to the Mountain Equipment Co-op. Because I went to sale to buy some, and I went to the paddling section.
And they don't have it.
And the guy looks at me and goes, no, you probably find that upstairs in the hunting section.
Why?
Okay.
It's for dry suits.
For zippers, whatever. Okay, so I went upstairs, and the guy looks at me, why would he send you up here?
Exactly.
I looked at the... that's what I was wondering, bud.
Yeah.
He works here. I figured he'd know. So I went... He says, yeah, we don't carry that.
Yeah.
And so I just hopped back in my truck and went over to the Mountain Equipment and...
Yeah.
Do you guys have... Yeah, right here. There you go. It is cheaper to buy it at Mech than it is to buy it on Amazon.
That's surprising.
Which is, because it was like $9, eight something at Mech, but it was like $25 at Amazon. Yeah. Huh. Like, that's huge difference.
Yeah.
Anyway, so apparently the cats are getting me that for Christmas. They just don't know it yet.
If I was to guess, the only clue I had for anything was a while back I was asked about shoe size. And I know that I have a pair of down-filled slippers that I wear all the time that the bottom's ripped out. There's not really much left of them. They're barely holding together.
Are you wearing them, though? Do you find them comfy?
I still wear them.
And who's telling you to get rid of them?
Nobody is. She just noticed that they are coming apart at the seams.
I'm believing there's a... My theory is a conspiracy theory. Women against men with torn shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Because every time a shoe gets torn or ripped, you say, oh, this is my beat-up shoe. I can wear it in the garage. I can wear it to a yard work. You should get yourself some new shoes.
Yeah.
Why? These are good for... Yeah, well, they're ripped.
They're comfortable.
That's conspiracy theory against women in torn shoes.
Yeah,
that's maybe my theory.
Yeah.
So that's what I was wondering. Like, your slippers, they're torn and comfortable, but are you being told you need new slippers?
No, I have not been told.
Okay, just wait for it.
And I haven't bought myself a pair, because when I first bought them, I think I got them at MEC or something, and they were like $30 or $40. And every time I've looked at replacement pairs for the exact same thing, they're like $80, $90 now. Yeah. It's like, what happened?
If I rip shoes or something like that, I look at shoes, I'm thinking, $60? Nah, these still work.
Yeah, these will work.
these still work.
Yeah.
I don't care that I'm getting sticks and stones and water in them. They still work.
Is there a non-skid duct tape you can buy? Because if I duct tape the base, then they'll just be slippery.
Yeah.
But I am thinking about duct taping them.
Really?
Hmm.
There's got to be some other tape out there.
Gorilla tape?
Maybe.
Gaffer's tape.
Why don't you just make yourself a pair of duct tape slippers? have a matching set.
I've made wallets out of duct tape before.
But you can get that spray on stuff that's like grit.
Yeah, that would work for camping, but that grit would just might peel off on carpets and hardwood floors.
end. Well, because so you buy a whole can of it, so you can keep reapplying as yeah. needed.
I need something for around the house. My floors are cold. I don't need
carpets.
Do you go? People go to great trouble to get rid of carpets. You don't have to vacuum it.
You know what those people are called? Cold-feeted people.
Yes, true. True.
Cold-feeted? Yep. Cold-footed?
Cold-footed.
Cold-footed. Cold-footed people. Yeah, they're... I remember it used to be, oh, we got to put carpets in every room. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, reveal the hardwood underneath yeah. the carpets. Let's yeah. get rid of our carpets. Everybody wants wood floors now. No.
On that last trip I was with the boys, it was... so... Mike Burns got himself they look brand new, a nice red pair, they're very fast, red pair of down-filled slippers for on camp. And so I saw him wearing it, and he was sitting next to me, and I saw the spark fly out of the fire, land on the shoe, and the hole in the slipper, it was like popping a balloon. It was like larger than about the same size as a toonie.
Really?
It started small, but you saw it grow really fast. He's like slapping. He's like, ah! But yeah, so his brand new pair of slippers now has a hole.
Do you remember the mech booties?
Yeah, I've
really
got a pair.
Really fluffy.
Yeah, I got a pair.
I want those are so warm.
Yes.
But you slide around in those things.
Yeah, the bases aren't that great. Not for not on snow.
Not on anything.
If it's packed snow or on ice, yeah, it's not so good. And I think a pair of those you know what would be good is the Rhino bed liner for pickup trucks. Imagine yeah. that would work on a base of a camping slipper.
Mm-hmm.
Just for, I don't think you'd want to
wear. Yeah, but how are you getting that bed liner in the back, in the back country? Two of them. No, I got those slipper thingies, and I bring them on winter camping.
Yeah.
So I can quickly throw them on my feet and go out in the middle
yeah,
of it for a pee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Other than that, they're my pee slippers.
I've got
That's all they are.
I've got a pair. They're MECs. They have a gusseted sleeve that goes almost right up to the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's down-filled about mid-calf length. And so it keeps your feet warm, and then it keeps snow out because it goes up. Way up the leg, right?
Right.
So it's a nice, comfy, down-filled pair.
I got myself a pair of winter boots. They come about halfway up my I was going to say thigh. I got thigh-high winter boots. High-heeled. Damn, I look good.
They're shiny black leather. They're great for the bedroom.
For the northern climates. They come about halfway up my calf. And they are probably the most comfortable winter boots I'd ever had. Like, there's times where I'll put them on just for the sake of putting them on. And I don't really need them on in the winter.
Yeah.
But I'll just put them on and walk anyway. They're just so comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They cost me a couple $100 too, but. And they were on sale at that price.
Yeah.
But, anywho. So, yeah, hopefully, when everybody's listening to this, you had a great. Christmas, got some
got together good family, stuff and good eating,
right? Like a pirate, you got some good booty.
Yeah, well, I think of Christmas
your
as
friends
a time,
weren't cheap.
I think of Christmas as a time to gather with family, and that's what I'm excited for is getting together with my family. Most of them are down in New Brunswick, but Siobhan's family's here, and so we always do Christmas dinners, and so it's nice.
It's gathering. All about the gifts, buddy.
Stop making it monetary. It's about family.
Yay, capitalism. Woo! Gimme. Gimme.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of gifts. I like giving gifts, but I don't like receiving
gifts.
Dude,
I'm the biggest Grinch around, I'll tell you that. I just get to make fun of it all. Mind you, I did have a client give me a bottle of Johnny Walker Black Label today.
Oh, very nice.
Oh. So that'll go down this week. I was reading about it, and it says, because I've already got a bottle, and it says, for new drinkers of it, people that haven't had it,
yeah,
try it neat, and drinking it right from the bottle,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to putting it in some... The way they worded it, I know they meant, don't pour it into like a decanter and then drink it straight from the bottle. And I'm thinking, am I supposed to drink that straight from the bottle? There should be a straw stuck to the side, like a juice box.
Like a juice box, or a WD-40 can.
Yeah, all right. What do you got in your lunch, Sean? A bottle of Johnny Walker. Peels the straw off. Awesome, good stuff. You know what I didn't get?
I don't know what you didn't get.
The alpaca raft rendezvous.
Nice segue.
Gotta like that, eh?
That worked See out
that?
Well.
That just worked out well. Us and our capitalism.
Yeah. Jeez.
So I came across this one, fashioned as a tandem raft with enough internal storage to outfit a week-long voyage. The full TPU construction rendezvous weighs just 10 pounds, packs down small enough to fit in your
pounds?
Backpack.
That's it?
Right? Try that with your family canoe. So they're trying to compare this to being a canoe, because you can, it's tandem. You can put two people in it.
Or four if you put people inside the pontoons.
Well, yes. Yes. I mean, the kids will fit into there.
Yes.
But people may get upset about that.
Yeah. And
the kids.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd have to unzip it once in a while to get fresh air in there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Air.
The rendezvous is $1,700 US. A premium inflatable canoe. 800 pound capacity.
Which
makes it a load hauler.
So it would be good if you were on like fly in, river run, no portages.
Mm-hmm.
If there was port, well, okay. So it says 800 capacity. And
that includes your people.
People.
So
saying
you got two
gear.
People that are 200 pounds.
No, people aren't going to bring that much stuff unless it's like a, I don't know, like a
400 pounds of food and gear.
Yeah,
and
so there's a little excess.
Guns and
yeah.
Bicycles.
But if you were going, so let's say you're a hunter, you're going in and you were going to get yourself a moose or a deer or something, then you could pack it out in this raft because it'll take the weight.
Mm-hmm. Well, they say it's a load hauler. Its ability to stand in and scout, like to stand up in it and scout proves it a true voyageur vessel.
Hmm.
For people who don't have the funds, storage space, or transport ability for a standard hard shell canoe.
True. Yeah.
This is a solid inflatable option. It's easily transportable, durable, and floats with the best.
Hmm. I'm just amazed it only weighs 10 pounds.
The weight is 10 pounds, low capacity 800, packed size 20 inches by 9 inches.
20 by 9, 20 by 9. That's like a packed sleeping bag or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Class 1 to 3 whitewater.
Hmm.
Tube diameter is 13 inches. Interior exterior length is 74.5 inches by 132 inches.
So it's what... I don't know how to say the denier. It's like the 210
denier.
Yeah,
210 denier
nylon
hull.
840 ballistic nylon floor.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you... You're going to rub against rocks and...
Yeah, you're going to...
Whatever. So you need extra protection.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear... I'd love to hear from somebody who actually has an inflatable kayak. Like, have you done river runs? Is it like
the only people I know that have
puncture resistant
kayaks, inflatable kayaks and canoes, don't use them for stuff like this.
What do they use it for?
Mostly lake travel.
Yeah?
Yep. Hmm. I do not know anybody that takes their inflatables on rivers.
Yeah.
For like river trips and stuff.
Yeah.
They all stick to lakes.
Huh. A buddy of mine, a guy I work with, he's got himself a couple planes. One is a float plane. So he bought one of these for his float plane to go fishing. He's going to go up north, go into remote areas, go fishing. And it's an inflatable pack raft that he bought, right? And so it's reasonable. Like it's tough to strap a canoe onto the whatever you call the supports for the floats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these something like that is for a fly-in fishing, a fly-in camping, a fly-in something where you need to get multiple watercraft in there. And so it makes sense, right? That's that's why I was thinking, like, if you did the Nahani or something, you fly in, float down in one of these things, right? So,
So the pros, massive load capacity. Integrated seat adds rigidity to the boat, We'll get into that in a minute. Can stand on the floor to scout or fish. Cargo fly can hold an impressive amount of kit. Cons, not as capable in whitewater as some other tandem rafts. Higher sitting platform means greater windage.
Yeah, so it sits high, catches wind.
The back is like a big bubble.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're sitting on the back of that, and you're higher than the person in front.
Yeah.
So you're acting like a sail or a backward sail. if you got a headwind. I can't remember the word I was going to use. Stern could use an integrated handle.
Yes, I was looking at that. There's not really much grab spots that you can
see. There's rings, they say, that you could put your own, make your own handle out of rope or something like that. But just put one in there.
And I don't know. So there's some, well, you can glue in patches and pads into your canoes for water, for you know, the foam and for knee, for mounting, for knee and straps and stuff like that. Yeah. I wonder what that glue would do to one of these kayaks. Could you use one of those glues to attach like grab handles and...
I don't know.
Points.
You probably have to use whatever they use.
Yeah.
Just to double check.
Well, they probably use radio welding, right? So it's...
Yeah.
It's probably radio welded. Not much glue would be used.
I would definitely be asking them before I did anything like that.
Yeah. What's it going to do? What kind of glue is safe to use on this fabric?
Yeah. Rendezvous wasn't the only new tandem offering from Alpaca Raft this past year. The new Tango, which we've talked about before... is offered as an ideal touring kayak pack raft, and the existing Forager raft covers your whitewater leanings. Rendezvous is the brand's approach to a canoe. The hull and floor are held together with RF welding.
There you go, ready fixture welding. Yep.
It's also sewn and double seam taped, and it uses TPU construction. Well-placed lash tabs stud the exterior and allow for rigging up a bow bag for essentials, while internal loops allow you to secure dry bags inside.
I suppose you wouldn't want your load shifting.
No, the guy that was doing the review of it said that you have to do that because if you're lifting it to, you know, two users are lifting it to carry it, if you tip it one way too much or
everything
one
slides
high,
to the nose, slides the,
yeah,
to the tail.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to...
stuff's moving around in there.
Put everything into the tabs and lash it down. While most all single paddler rafts have some degree of tracking slop, the Rendezvous counters with two paddlers. Propelling the Rendezvous solo, however, is a game of balance. Paddling from the rear affords a great waggle to contend with, and only less so from the bow. So the one thing he was saying was if you kneel on the thwart, that I don't know why they call it a thwart.
It's like
a giant
seat.
Inflatable seat that's attached on both sides.
Yeah. It's integrated. Yeah.
And it's that's where they say, oh yeah, the second paddler can sit on the thwart. It's not a thwart. It's a seat.
I guess you could consider it a thwart because it does maintain the position of the center of the quote unquote gunnels. I'm doing air quotes here. So the big long tubes and this big bubble seat sits in the middle and it just holds the tubes in place. So it acts like
a thwart. It gives some stability.
But it looks like a seat.
Yeah. Standing at the bow of the Rendezvous, you are able to swing cast after cast to the near shore, easily clearing your co-paddler on the back cast, which your co-paddler will be most appreciative of.
Yes.
Now, so basically, you can stand up and fish.
But every time I hear people talk about fishing in these things, it's like, I don't know. Like, I've caught hooks on canoes a lot of times.
Right?
And the last thing you need is like, oh, yeah, I've been casting all day today, and now I have 12 hook holes in my
And guy. Slowly, I'm hearing this. Sounds like air escaping from a tiny hole. Multiple tiny holes
by
the end of the day. Tie-zip cargo fly at the stern of the raft is significantly more generous. Its placement in the middle of the tubes allows you to split the opening wider to accommodate bulkier kits, such as backpacks with complicated frames. With so much space, we could have been a bit more luxurious in our overnight gear choices. So, yeah, there's that big zipper in the front, Yondu.
Yep.
You put all your stuff in the tubes, you zip it back up, and then you fill the whole thing with air.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all your gear is inside the tubes, not in. Because I'm looking at it to begin with, thinking, they're saying this thing's loaded down, and there's just two people paddling.
Yeah.
A day pack.
Yeah.
That is not loaded down. And then you start reading and you're realizing they filled the tubes
jammed inside
with all their gear.
Hmm.
An 800-pound max capacity also means you shouldn't be hamstrung by hauling weight. While I could only see coming close to that when packing out game animals.
Oh, okay, I mentioned that.
It does allow for the full tackle box when fishing or a cheeky cast iron pan. Storing your kit on the interior of the raft also makes it act like ballast. There was no appreciable difference in speed when paddling loaded down or not. It carries well, but securing your kit inside seems essential. Tip too far one way, it all goes sliding. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you have to definitely secure everything on the inside. New integrated thwart is a smart addition and improvement over the old Oryx design. It stiffened up the raft to the point it doesn't need the inflatable floor that the brand's Forager raft sports. It won't be as wicked of a whitewater craft, but for flat water transits, the trade-off in weight and packed size makes it a winner. Standing up in the rendezvous, surprisingly, is the highlight of this pack raft. Canoe paddling and poling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
From here, you can scout braided rivers or make solid casts when fishing. Being a tandem pack raft also cracks the adventure menu open a bit wider. It even makes piloting the vessel while whipping up a mid-river snack easy. So basically, you can eat in this while you're sitting out in the water. For those who aim to go deep, travel light, and catch a few trout along the way, it's tough to argue this isn't the canoe you want.
It's hard to argue against it.
Right? You wouldn't want this if you're going big-time interior.
Yeah, if you're going to do multiple portages and deep interior. But if it's a simple access, I think you could make it work either way. But see,
depends how much gear you bring.
I think where I could see this being used is fly-in fishing or fly-in river travel, mm-hmm. where you have multiple people and you can't bring multiple boats. Because the few times that I've gone for fly-in, it's like if you have two groups of two people, you have two canoes, you can't take two canoes on the flight, and so you need two flights. But if you had a bunch of these, then you could easily deflate them. They're 10 pounds. The pilot ain't going to care because it's just another piece of the gear, piece of the pack that you're carrying in. So it would work in remote areas, and if,
as long as you don't have big portage.
Exactly.
Like you see some of these guys like Frank Wolf and that, who
we
want on a 12-hour portage.
Yeah.
You're not taking this.
Or not just 12 hours. Imagine if you have a section river with like 12 portages. It's like pack it in, pack it out. Like you'd be undoing that zipper and putting stuff in.
Because you're not going to be carrying that.
Yeah.
With the
gear inside.
I gotta think there's going to be stresses on that.
Yeah.
With all your gear hanging in there.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
So that's for a lake or two with easy portages, quick, small ones.
Yeah. A fly-in northern lake. Bunch of guys. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And with it just seems like it would be ideal for that situation where you don't want to bring a hard shell canoe type thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So the Alpaca Rendezvous.
It is appealing.
$1,700 US.
Mm-hmm.
Get one. Go get two.
Yeah.
Get four.
It's a novelty item. I couldn't justify it.
Yeah, I wouldn't use one of those enough. As cool as it would be to try it out once in a while, I wouldn't get enough use out of it.
Imagine if you filled it with helium.
Oh, you could float it.
You could just fly above the river.
Right? If there's enough helium in that, just float. All your buddies are trying to get down that river, that white water, and you're just like, doo-doo-doo, pushing off of rocks. You go to hit a rock and boop.
Yeah.
Spin around, floating backwards, 4 feet off the water. Awesome.
Everything is awesome.
If you're looking for something different to do, and you're in the Grayling, Michigan area for New Year's.
East of Traverse City.
Yeah, it's east of Traverse City. Celebrate New Year's Eve grailing style with our unique twist on the classic ball drop. Join us in front of the county building on Michigan Avenue to watch the iconic canoe drop as we count down to 2025. Family-friendly event is free to attend and perfect way to gather with the community as we welcome in the new year together. So instead of doing the New Year's Eve ball drop like you see in New York City,
Clark's rocking New Year's Eve.
Apparently, they're going to drop a canoe slowly, I would presume.
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah, chances are it's going to be a well-lit canoe, and it's going to be lowered by rope like a flag on a mast.
See, that's what you need. You get an old, busted-up canoe,
yeah,
and you launch it into the lake at midnight. A giant slingshot.
Light it on fire. And
light it on fire. Put lights on it. 3, 2, 1. Vroom!
Yeah, that'd be a Viking.
Put a giant fake Santa Claus in there.
Be a Viking New Year's Eve.
See? Welcome to Viking New Year's Eve.
Rockin' yeah. Mickey New Year's
Eve. The military was called. That was a flaming fireball.
Yeah. That'd work. That would be fun.
That would be hilarious. See, that's why we are never in charge of what happens.
We're not in charge of entertainment.
For Christmas and New Year's and any other holidays that happen. We don't get to plan the festivities.
Yeah.
Such a shame. Such a shame. I came across an article by a gentleman named Joshua Hunt. An unfinished boat hidden on a remote island in Alaska illuminates a missing chapter in the history of traditional Haida and Tlingit canoe building. He says, when I first see the canoe in May, it takes a moment to distinguish the long, shapely slab of cedar from a patch of earth that has spent more than a century trying to reclaim it. Covered in moss and ravaged from decades of slow rot, the narrow boat lay in the same spot where indigenous Alaskans had carved it from the trunk of a western cedar tree, red cedar. They did this in the place where the tree fell, first by cutting it into two pieces, then by fashioning the canoe to the lower portion of the tree so that it sits between the stump and the abandoned upper part of the trunk like a philosophical question made real. Excised and reshaped but never moved from where it fell, it is not still part of the tree. Seaworthy but destined never to touch the sea, is it not still a boat? Philosophical.
Yeah, it's very philosophical. Stop that.
Yeah. I traveled halfway around the world for a glimpse of the forest floor tableau, a long flight from Tokyo, Japan to Seattle, Washington, followed by a shorter trip to Ketchikan, small town in southeast Alaska, where I spent much of my childhood. From there, a very small plane took me to the Prince of Wales Island to meet my guide.
Stormy Hammer.
I'm thinking it's Hamar.
I think it's Hammer.
Hamar. Hammer. I'm going with Hamar, who shepherded me to the canoe site by car. Then on a small skiff powered by 60 horsepower outboard engine and eventually on foot. With no clear path to follow, we made our way from the shoreline to the island's lush, hilly interior, climbing over trees felled by wind, crawling beneath spiky tendrils of Devil's Club, passing through shallow streams and around walls of dense brush. The canoe's location deep in the wild is a closely guarded secret meant to protect the unique archaeological site from adventure-seeking tourists.
Exactly.
Good plan.
Yes.
Hamar agreed to take me in part because of my Tlingit heritage, which makes my history entwined with that of his own Haida and ancestors, who are thought to have carved the canoe roughly 140 years ago.
That's a fascinating thing for me, is that this...
140 years.
It was so about 1880, about the time it was when it was carved, they estimate. So it sat there that long, and it's still semi-viable. It's there. It's recognizable.
It's recognizable, but it'll never touch water.
No. But it's still fascinating that, cedar's known for long lasting. That's why it's all commonly used for watercraft.
Yeah.
But still, 140 years ago.
Totally covered in moss. Before abandoning it for reasons we will never know. I mean, you could guess.
Yeah, it was about 1880, but, so that was about a time when you know, remote tribes were being integrated or contacted, so there would be potential conflicts, there would be potential illnesses transmitted, and so on. So who knows? Like from what they're describing, it sounds like there were several dozen boats in this area that were carved over the years, and then it suddenly stopped.
Yeah,
they stopped carving boats around 140 years ago. So you can sort of guess what happened, but it's still fascinating that this was like basically a boatyard, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's quite the ways from the water.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hamar first heard about this place over a decade earlier from a local man who stumbled upon it while scouting the island for a prospective helicopter logging operation. The scout who discovered the site was far from the waterline, high up in the kind of steep terrain considered ideal for helicopter logging. When he noticed an unusual number of stumps for a site where cutting had not yet begun, then he noticed that many of the fallen logs next to those stumps were missing sections of their trunk up to 10 meters long. Only after finding a single canoe that had been carved but not hauled away did he realize where the missing sections had gone. Yeah.
He's like, oh, somebody logged this, but they only took a 10-meter section.
So they built the canoes and then hauled them off to the water, right?
So he saw all these segmented chunks of trees missing. He's like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Oh, look, this one isn't hauled away. You can still see the canoe there.
One thing in particular caught his attention. Traditionally, once dugout canoes have been carved from a single cedar or spruce log, they are filled with seawater and heated rocks to produce a water vapor that is then trapped beneath a heavy tarp made from woven cedar, causing the wood to expand and the boat to become much broader and stronger. This canoe's narrow hull and shallow interior told Hamar that its creators had finished the carving, but abandoned the boat before carrying out the steaming process. Because wooden boats don't typically last long in wet environments, and because Alaska's southeastern archipelago is largely temperate rainforest, unfinished canoes are rare in the archaeological records. This and others found in coastal British Columbia and Alaska stand apart from canoes preserved in museums or built by modern craftspeople for the clues they may offer about boat-making traditions lost during the period after colonization and before post-assimilation initiatives aimed at preserving Alaska native culture. In particular, this canoe offers insight into the vital step before steaming, a process that changes a boat's shape considerably.
That's amazing, eh?
So, yeah, because you're finding logs either just started
carving,
or you find the finished product, like the ones in Wisconsin that are underwater.
Exactly, stored for the winter.
So they're already being used, but this one's sort of like halfway through the construction, but just before a very important part.
Yeah.
When we look at the old canoe in the woods, even though it's falling apart and there's not too much left of it, there may be things we can learn from it, especially relating to the shape. It may have hidden secrets. Hamar's quest to fill these gaps has drawn us deep into the forest in old Haida territory, where we suddenly come across the abandoned canoe. At first, my eyes struggle to discern its shape. In the same way they seek out the familiar contours of my bedside lamp when I wake in pitch blackness. Only revealed to me, though, the outline of the vessel is so obvious that it could almost serve as a model for an emoji of a canoe. The effect of seeing it in the wild is jarring in a way I had not expected. Instead of resting behind glass in a sterile museum where its context would depend on educational placards and set decoration to make it appear as a kind of enormous diorama, the object stands before me in the only place it has ever existed. The craftspeople who shaped it, now long dead, have done the work here in this very forest. They may very well have been sleeping around here everywhere, Hamar says. It seems like it would be the most efficient to live here, given the amount of time it would take to create a canoe.
Yeah, so they go in, live for a couple weeks in the area, carving and cutting and make camp. And so it's a summer camp type thing. And they carve their canoes and then haul it away once they're done. So it makes sense that because it's so remote, it's not near the water. It's up, it's up in the hills.
You're not going to want to go from your water village or something all the way in
You're
here.
You're going to stay there for weeks at a time in the summer to build these things.
Yeah. And I mean, wherever your village is may not have these trees that you need. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They need the very large, structurally sound red cedar. Mm-hmm.
Long after its builders departed, the canoe remains more or less as they left it, raised off the ground by two logs that sit beneath it at either end like two massive sawhorses. Undisturbed, unstudied, and exposed to the elements, the canoe lay beneath a coat of moss and rot that, when Hamar first encountered it, made the matter of deciding its fate especially urgent. If the canoe was to be moved to a museum, it would need to be done before it rotted further, and with the understanding that the process itself could end up destroying the delicate vessel. Leaving it to the elements, on the other hand, would preserve the object in its natural surroundings, but make its long-term preservation impossible and its study difficult. So what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remove it and risk it, or do you leave it and to its fate?
So
sort of thing,
if
right?
you move it, it's going to potentially distort right away.
Yeah.
But if you leave it in situ, it'll still go away, but it'll just go away slower, and it'll give you time to study it in place.
Yeah.
So I think they made the right choice.
There's one thought process, for example, when you take that when a totem pole gets old and starts deteriorating, you kind of let it go back to the earth without interference, Hamar says. And then there's another mindset that you would maintain it just like you might maintain your boat or your car. These are just opinions, of course, and I go back and forth, but essentially I think it would be a shame if any information is lost because we really don't know the significance of what we might be losing.
Hmm.
In the midst of COVID-19 pandemic, a solution to Hamar's dilemma presented itself in the form of an unfamiliar vehicle that pulled up in front of his property, driven by a name named Jason Rucker, who was sailing through Southeast Alaska with his wife. The pair stopped after noticing a huge cedar log near the tent where Hamar spends his days carving, and soon they found themselves in the middle of an impromptu tour. It was really inspiring and moving, Rucker says, hearing him talk about his work on these canoes. Before they left, Hamar mentioned the decaying Haida canoe and his hope to document it for posterity. It was at this point Rucker's wife turned to him and said, "You have to tell this guy what you do." He says, "I have been into wooden boats and worked on wooden boats for my entire adult life," Rucker says. For years, he had done repair on restoration work for the San Francisco Maritime Museum, where he also made specialized drawings of significant boats for the historical record. Called line drawings, they resemble architectural renderings, but for maritime vessels. So just
the right fluky. Exactly. So
showed up at the right time, right place.
So it's what he does for a living. He does these studies and restorations. Mm-hmm. He came by, saw the big log there. He saw the guy that was working on it. He's like, "Hey, he's carving a canoe." And so he stopped, and that's how the connection between these two men was made.
Rucker and Hamar stayed in touch. Before long, they'd secured a maritime heritage grant made available through Alaska's Office of History and Archaeology to document the canoe and formalize the project under the umbrella of Hamar's nonprofit, the Haida Canoe Revitalization Group. Then Rucker roped in Cultural Heritage Imaging, a San Francisco-based nonprofit that uses technology to create sophisticated digital images in 3D renderings of cultural artifacts with an emphasis on helping indigenous groups take control of their own cultural narratives. To create a digital rendering of the Haida canoe was a daunting proposition given the remoteness of the site. It took years for the Haida canoe revitalization team to prepare. That's like I say, right time, right guy
exactly.
happened to drop by.
The right people bounced into each other.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
At the canoe site, the team spreads out to get the, and gets to work. Rucker and Stephanie Hamar use a digital camera to photograph the boat, capturing tens of millions of measurements of spatial position that will ultimately fit together like jigsaw pieces to produce a hyper-accurate 3D model. One of the archaeologists maps the area with large drone equipment with LIDAR, mapping technology that uses a laser capable of penetrating vegetation, while other archaeologists and Stormy Hamar survey the site by foot. So the LIDAR, the canoes in Wisconsin that are under the water, buried, in winter, they went over the ice with the LIDAR.
Yes.
And could read the bottom, and that's where they found other... There had been structures and stuff like that, right? The pair confirms what the logger who found the site had suspected. Not just one canoe, but a whole fleet had been carved here, making it a Haida boatyard. Piece by piece, the secrets of the canoe hidden beneath decades of moss and decay begin to reveal themselves. Once the digital rendering is complete, carvers throughout the region will be able to access it from their own homes and communities, peering at the canoe's precise measurements or at cross-sections that show, for instance, how the bottom curve of the canoe corresponds perfectly with the growth ring deep in the heartwood of the cedar it came from. They'll be able to see exactly how much girth was removed from the exterior of the tree before the carving began, or examine the nuances of how the hull was shaped before it was altered by steaming.
Huh.
The canoe itself will stay in the forest where it was carved, rotting into soil, preserved only as a drawings in a book or images on a computer screen. The team hopes to eventually take measurements and make similar digital models of other canoes, including up to 20 more found abandoned in forests in British Columbia and Alaska, creating an archive of boats from around the region.
That's amazing, eh?
So it's basically, do we leave it there or do we take it? Realistically, they're now able to do both.
Yes,
they take it with the pictures and the 3D modelings and all that, and they leave it there to do its...
I think it's best that they left it in situ, but it just let it go back to Earth as it would have naturally. But at least they have the digital renderings, the scans, and all the photographs. And now you have there's a 3D digital rendering on the website where this guy's story lives, and it runs through a 3D spin around of the canoe, and so you can see all the parts and pieces of it in this fantastic digital
parts
photo.
And pieces that are left.
Yeah, what's left? There's
those big holes in the bottom that
exactly.
might need a bit of a patch job.
Exactly, it'll still float, but only because it's wood,
right? Yeah, it's pretty cool that they're able to.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, you're curious why they abandoned the build, because they were so close to finishing it.
Right.
So obviously something drastic must have happened at the time.
Well, and you figure like if they got like 20 others or 10 others or whatever it was out of there, why this one?
Something happened. Something happened.
Yeah, maybe they were just making another one and then just had enough and.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the trail?
Maybe they forgot it. Got lost. Maybe. Where'd we put that canoe?
Where'd we put that last boat? that was a pretty cool little history thing
to
come upon.
Yeah.
Talking about more boats here, I came across this one, Wilderness Systems. Now I have the Wilderness Systems Tsunami 165, my kayak. Wilderness Systems Tactical Pro 128. They make some pretty neat fishing kayaks and stuff like that. My question, because they say pre-sale for new fishing kayak with bass boat features. The ultimate kayak haul for dual motor power. At what point does a kayak stop becoming a kayak?
This is more like a miniature fishing barge.
Right?
It's so square looking. It's just a
Little pontoony.
Yeah, it's just thingies. A square boxy
that
kayak
you can put an electric motor on both ends.
Yep, exactly,
and a chair in the middle that swivels around.
Lots of storage pockets and.
At what point does it no longer be? Is it no longer a kayak?
It's like they need to come up with a new name for them,
right? Fishing barge.
Yeah, fishing barge or something. Yeah.
Yeah. with their new Tactical Pro 128, Wilderness Systems has introduced a breakthrough kayak hull design engineered to handle both bow and stern mounted motors. I mean, I have an issue right off the bat with putting motors on kayaks, but that's just me. You do you. This beast of a boat delivers stability up front with dual pontoons, while the V-shaped rear is built for cutting sharp controlled turns. And with a retractable skeg to kill any drift, it's rewriting the rules of what a fishing kayak can do. Wilderness Systems Tactical Pro is a kayak that embodies our commitment to innovation and excellence in the world of competitive fishing. Scott Byers, Wilderness Systems product manager, says, "This kayak is not just a tool. It's the edge anglers need on the water with a kayak that is just as versatile as it is strategic."
Mm-hmm. It's a big chunk of plastic that's going to go out in nature.
Yeah. Tactical Pro 128 represents the culmination of extensive testing and innovation aimed at delivering a superior fishing kayak, from its stability-enhancing design to its advanced ergonomic aspect of this kayak. It's geared towards empowering anglers to achieve their best. We're excited to introduce this kayak as a game changer in the fishing community with its cutting edge features and benefits to anglers worldwide, where bass boat meets kayak.
Hmm.
See, and that's, I have the issue.
Bass barge.
Right?
If you look at it, like if you, whoever's listening, if you just Google Wilderness Systems Tactical Pro 128, and you don't have somebody in the background yelling extra words trying to confuse Google, then you'll go right straight to it. And it's just a square block of plastic with a chair, right? It doesn't look like a kayak anymore. And it's honestly, they got to come up with a new name. But it's very interesting for if you're into fishing, if you're into the outdoorsy stuff, and you do, like I, a couple of friends of mine, they do have these kayaks, not like this one, but they do have fishing kayaks with batteries and trolling motors and stuff like that for getting out fishing. It's if that's the aggressive type of fishing that you want to do, then this seems like a good boat. It's not that expensive, really. It's, what is it?
$2,400 US, $3,200 Canadian.
Yeah, $3,200 Canadian. That's not too, if that's what you're into, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah. And I mean, I've seen wider ones that there, I don't know how they can call it a kayak because you cannot paddle it with a kayak.
But I also wonder about this. Does it say how wide it is?
38 inches wide.
So, like, what's that? It's just less than 3 feet. Yeah. Wait. Less than?
36 inches is 3 feet.
Yeah, so it's just over 3 feet. And it's, like, what's the
almost 13 feet long. Yeah. 12 feet, 8 inches
so
long.
So, it's got to, obviously, it must be stable. They say you can stand
158
in
pounds.
Yeah.
Mass capacity, 800 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So it's got to be stable if you're going to be fishing off it. But it just looks funny when you look at the photo on the website.
Comes in Mesa, camo, or Ranger green.
Yeah. Like, if anybody's into science fiction, it looks like a big space barge.
Doesn't it?
I imagine somebody...
Space fishing.
Somebody's going to buy one, paint it a specific color, and say, and use it in a movie, and it'll be their space barge.
Right. they say key features, rigged for power, designed for easy power integration. The kayak includes internal battery storage position for optimal weight distribution. Comfort positioning, enhanced casting range with confidence in the open deck, featuring a 360-degree swivel on the AirPro ACES seat and noise absorbing traction pads. Yeah, they got these pads on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're moving your feet or doing stuff, it limits the noise.
You don't want to scare the fish away.
Yeah. Stable hull optimized for power. Optimized for stability while standing, the kayak's unique bow pontoons ensure steady maneuvering through turns and waves. Do you remember going fishing in the boat with your dad or grandfather's kid? And they say, shh. You'll scare the fish away?
Yeah.
I think that was just getting them to shut you up.
I think so, too.
I don't think the...
I don't know. I don't think that the that much noise is really going to chase off the fish that much.
Yeah. It's just like, how'd you get the kids to shut up? Take them fishing.
Yeah. Shut them up every time.
Again, it's 12 feet 8 inches long, 38 inches wide, 18.3 inches deep, 158 pounds, can hold 800 pounds, made of polyethylene. They got like 27 things that features that set it apart.
Oh, don't read them all, please.
front grab handles, trolling motor, bow mount.
Hatch and bin, battery access, gear storage. So that those
there's
are
a lot of
things.
That sort of stuff.
You want
right?
to store stuff inside it, type thing, right?
Yeah.
And like, there's, I've seen them with live wells and stuff. So you can just stick the fish into the live well, and so then you keep the fish alive, and so right. So yep. If you're going to be out there for a long time,
console tracks, side tracks, active rod trays, handles, storage under the seat, skeg controls. Motor deploy control. Deploy the motors!
Cool. I don't know what that means.
Fish measuring board, storage tray, tank well tracks, access hatch, mounting surface suitable for stern mount accessories, stern handles. It's got handles and tracks everywhere all mm-hmm. over this thing. Front pontoons, transducer recess.
Oh, there you go.
Skid plates. You know, slide right up on the shore and not worry about it. Wilderness Systems Tactical Pro 128 will be available to consumers starting March 2025. For more information about it, visit confluenceoutdoor.com. And if you're that into fishing and you want that much extra, then make sure you...
It seems like a good rig for people who are into the into that kind of sport fishing.
Yeah, take a peek at it. It might be right up your alley.
Yeah.
So,
So who is it? We saw... We covered him a couple months ago. He won a scholarship.
Oh, yeah, that was a little while ago, yeah.
Yeah, he has a scholarship, and he does outdoor fishing.
For a college.
College.
Yeah.
And so... This, I guarantee you, this is something he would be interested in.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm still astonished that you can get a scholarship for fishing.
They put me through college, Dad.
Like, I would have moved to the States decades ago. So, yeah, my son got a scholarship to a big U.S. school. Oh, yeah, what's he doing? Football? Hockey? Baseball? Fashion. Say, what now?
But guaranteed, this is something that he would be interested in. He'd look at the Skyak and say, oh, that's some nice fishing gear. That's some, I could use that.
You know, I joke about it, but yeah, there's some... If somebody said, here, take this out and do some fishing, I'd be away on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just hop there, on that baby and go. But like I say, there comes a point.
Mm.
Like some of these kayaks that are so wide and stuff with the seats and everything else.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call them a kayak. I really wouldn't.
They're losing it.
Right? Yeah.
They really got to come up with a new name.
There's a...
Fishing
there's
barge.
There's a point. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a fishing barge. We used to take picnic tables. When I was in, I think it was North Bay, there was a park that used to flood. No, it wasn't North Bay. I think it was out in Cold Lake, Alberta. There was a park that used to flood, and we used to take the picnic tables and mm-hmm. flip them upside down in the spring and half float on the picnic tables.
Oh, yeah.
Upside down. That's what these are.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
just picnic tables without the legs.
Yeah.
One last thing here. We're going to end on a non-serious note to this year. You brought this one out.
I saw that. It's like, it's a slow news week. What's going on?
Right? A BC man wins hotly contested Stick of the Year contest with piece of driftwood.
So this is on Vancouver Island, the Couchin Valley up island a bit. And it's like, when I first saw it, it's like, Stick of the Year contest. It's like, wait a second. And I mentioned this to a woman at work. I said, oh, look at this. Slow news week. She goes, and she just kind of groaned. She goes, yeah, I've got kind of tied up into Stick Talk, she said. I said, what? Stick Talk? She goes, yeah, people really admire sticks. It's like, oh. So it's, I thought it was unusual and unique, but it's apparently a little bit
apparently
common.
It's a thing. The most majestic piece of driftwood Finder says of sword-like winner, which fought off global competition.
Yes.
Global what competition.
Was it? The runner-up was from Poland.
Yeah. Piece of Driftwood from Vancouver Island has narrowly won the title of Stick of the Year in an inaugural contest that saw thousands of votes cast for competitors from around the world. To earn the accolade, the sword-like piece of wood had to beat sticks from Portugal, the Dominican Republic, and Germany, among other countries. But Marcus Barrick of Duncan, B.C., based musician and author, believed in the power of the stick he found while walking through the woods. "This thing's like the most majestic piece of driftwood I've ever seen," he said.
I agree
in his
with
official
him.
Submission video for the contest, moving it through the air while calling it an ancient energy sword.
So we Googled this earlier, and it looks much like the sword from Halo.
Right? The video game.
The energy sword on Halo.
"Clearly hosts a ton of energy and just handles so nicely. I like to scramble through rivers and rocks. It was kind of low water season, so I just found the stick perched up on a rock." The contest was hosted by Official Stick Reviews, an Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube account that allows stick enthusiasts to share their favorite wooden finds with thousands of Stick Nation enthusiasts.
Stick enthusiast.
The winner was announced by Grammy-nominated musician Noah Kahan, a self-described stick lover, stick aficionado, whose breakthrough hit was called Stick Season. I'm just looking around the studio here, wondering if I'm being punked.
I know.
Are there cameras? Where is Al Funk?
Wait a sec. There's Derek pulling one over my eyes.
"Your stick is fantastic," he says after naming Barrick the winner. But the result was close. Barrick received 51.2% of the final vote, just ahead of the club-like stick from Poland. According to the Official Stick Reviews, the Canadian stick had a healthy lead until a major Polish Instagram account posted about the contest, leading to a surge of votes for the runner-up, some of which came in after polling had closed.
Oh.
T-shirts are now being made with the image of the winning stick on them, and Barrick is going to receive a championship belt, according to the Official Stick Reviews. As for the stick itself, it's currently mounted on Barrick's wall, and he has no plans to give it away. "I'm not interested in the monetary aspect of it. I hope the contest winner will get more people to pay attention to the importance of forests and wilderness, especially here in BC."
I want that t-shirt.
I'm going to break into his house and steal that stick.
Do you think 140 years from now somebody's going to be talking about this stick that won the Stick Dog accolades?
"I remember the stick winning stick for the stick competition in 2024. And it was like it was yesterday. That was a beauty of a stick. Ain't seen one that great since. I hear tell it's stuck on a wall somewhere. Money can't buy it."
Money can't buy quality like that.
"You'd be hard pressed to find another stick like that. That ancient energy sword."
Yeah. It is a nice stick. I do have to admit, it's a nice
stick.
If
I was
stick.
A kid and I found that, I would be stabbing all my friends with it because it looks exactly like a sword.
Yeah.
And like the end part, almost like a hilt that wraps around your hand.
Exactly, yeah.
So I do agree with what he says. Like, it looks like a good sword. If I was 8. Oh, who am I kidding? Give me a couple beers.
Yeah.
Nope. I'm trying to slice your head off. There can only be one.
There can only be one.
Yeah, what happened? We picked up sticks, had a couple beers, and the Highlander broke out.
Exactly.
It was awesome. Kind of fighting. I almost cut Derek's head off. you got anything else this week?
I don't. I'm. You know what? I do like the stick. It is a nice looking stick, and I'm gonna have to see if I can find the
now
t-shirt.
We're going stick hunting.
I want the t-shirt.
Found a stick, and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
If he puts it up for auction, I bet somebody's gonna spend a lot of money to acquire
right?
it. That's like a $10,000 plus stick.
See. Next year, dude, you start looking for sticks now because next year that belt could be in this studio.
The right level.
As we are talking about the 2025 stick winner, Derek Specht.
I honestly don't think we could ever afford it. It'd be like a Van Gogh or...
No, I'm telling you, you go find sticks.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and you enter next year and you win this contest, Derek. You win it, and you bring that stick and that belt here. You bring it home, baby.
I'll be driven.
Mom, why's Dad keep looking for sticks everywhere?
I do carve the kids lots of hiking sticks.
I don't think you can carve them. I think you've got to find it as is.
I'm just saying, I do carve the kids decent hiking sticks with all kinds of symbols and patterns and stuff on them. And so we are a stick-oriented family.
See? Now you just got to find... the sticks.
I have to go find Stick Talk.
Go check out Stick Talk, everybody. Forget all this paddling crap.
Exactly.
Just go find Stick Talk.
Oh, so fascinating.
That's our last story of 2024.
It is. It's our last.
Right?
Next episode will be
January 2nd.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Yeah, you got nothing else, though?
I have nothing else.
All right, well... Again, hope everybody's having a great holiday season and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, as much as we joke about gifts and hopefully your friends aren't cheap and whatnot, it is about the family and getting together with friends and stuff like that.
And it's nice to have left on such a high note with the stick. It's amazing.
Right?
So.
It's only downhill from here now.
It's all downhill from here. We can't approve on this.
We may not be back next week.
This is our high water
mark.
This
is it. We're just going to walk out at the peak. A peak.
This is our high watermark.
Right. This is so sad. I don't know. They talked about sticks and were never heard from again. That was it. They just disappeared.
Nothing could compare.
Nothing could compare to the stick of 2024 from BC.
Cochin Valley in BC.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. All righty. Happy holidays, everybody, and we'll help you have a happy new year. And
Merry Christmas, happy new years.
Back at you, Derek.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good one. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next week.
Yes.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I'd like to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.